from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On his first big campaign swing since the Republican National Convention, John Kerry came out swinging yesterday in Ohio.
It all comes down to one letter, W. George W. Bush. And what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong. Wrong direction, wrong choices, wrong priorities, wrong judgment for our country.
That feistiness may come not a moment too soon. A new USA Today Gallup poll shows Kerry trailing George Bush by 7 points among likely voters. On the key issue of handling terrorism, Bush is now preferred by 27 points over Kerry, up from a 10-point edge last month. With just 8 weeks to go until Election Day, President Bush is riding a post-convention bounce. John Kerry is shaking up his campaign staff. The Democratic contender has proven to be a fierce fighter who can deliver a knockout even from behind, but can he do it this time? Tonight on Point, John Kerry's catch-up challenge in the home stretch to November 2nd. We begin in the swing state of Ohio. Over the Labor Day weekend, John Kerry rolled out his campaign bus, rolled up his sleeves, talked about the 230,000 jobs Ohio has lost in the last 3 years, and went after George Bush. Jill Lawrence reports for USA Today and is traveling with John Kerry. She joins me now from Cincinnati. Jill, thanks for being with us tonight.
Sure, my pleasure.
Jill, can you describe what kind of wake-up call have the polls since the Republican National Convention showing a significant lead for George Bush? What kind of wake-up call have those been inside the Kerry campaign?
Well, I'd say we've seen a lot of changes since Senator Kerry's been back out on the campaign trail. I mean, he has a larger staff. He's added people, particularly some Clinton veterans and some of his own longtime associates from 30 years past. And he has completely changed the tenor of his remarks. He now has this W stands for wrong theme that he's using on issues from the economy to Iraq and stem cell research, anything you can name, energy independence. So he's very feisty. You know, in a sense, before the convention, he was almost acting like he was sitting on a lead, even though it was pretty close. And I think this has been the kind of wake-up call you describe, where he realizes he's now in one of those back-against-the-wall situations, and he's going for it.
How does the campaign bubble feel these days, Jill? Are they knocked back on their heels? Are they feeling confident? How would you describe it?
Well, I wouldn't say knocked back on their heels. I think a lot more will become known in the next week or so as polls keep being taken. Our poll showed a 7-point lead for the president, which was less than what polls taken during the convention showed. And there's actually a poll that the Kerry people are talking about today, a tracking poll done by what they call a Republican firm called Rasmussen, that shows that race completely tied again, 47-47. So I think, you know, that they're cautiously optimistic at this point that they're going to be back into the tie where the race was before the convention. Obviously, that's not good enough to win. I think there's a lot of hope that the debates will be pivotal in their favor, and if history is a guide, there'll be twice as many people watching those debates as watched the acceptance speeches at the conventions. So that's another shot for them at a lot of attention and possibly a good outcome.
Jill, it was only a few days ago that John Kerry seemed unable to be critical on Iraq because of his own record and his own statements. Now he's begun to say Bush was wrong on Iraq, wrong this way, wrong that way. George Bush has come back from Missouri yesterday and today, mocking Kerry for changing again. But am I right in perceiving that Kerry seems to be just moving with this time and not as concerned about Bush's criticism?
Well, I think that's right. I think that he's finally figured out a way to explain what he means. When he says W stands for wrong, he says wrong decisions, wrong judgment, wrong choices, wrong priorities. You know, he's managed to frame it as, yeah, I authorized the war, but everything, you know, that he's done I would do differently, and here's where he's gone wrong. And he seems less timid, you know, less hemmed in by his vote to authorize that war. Now, the president is it's interesting because the war has dominated the campaign trail, even on Labor Day. Traditionally, when you focus on economics, and there's certainly a lot of material there for both of them to talk about, Iraq has dominated the debate, and in part that's because they're using it. It's the way they attack each other on character and leadership issues. Kerry trying to cast doubt on Bush's judgment, and Bush trying to cast doubt on Kerry's principles and consistency. So it's just become central to the campaign, and I expect it's going to stay that way.
Jill, you're right there on the scene. When John Kerry picks up this hotter language, this tougher critique of Bush and Cheney, how does he wear it? How does it come across when he's speaking to crowds?
Well, he's usually speaking to crowds that are very excited to hear this sort of thing. You know, they're Democratic faithful. For instance, in West Virginia yesterday, it was the United Mine Workers picnic. In Cleveland last night, it was a Labor Day picnic that was in a congressional district represented by a black congresswoman, Stephanie Tubbs-Jones. So, you know, these people are predisposed to be very enthusiastic about Democrats and very much opposed to President Bush. And I think, you know, possibly some Democrats are taking heart that Senator Kerry is coming out of a terrible August with seemingly a plan.
Sounds like it, looks like it, on the trail right now. Jill Lawrence, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, thank you.
Jill Lawrence is a reporter for USA Today covering the Kerry campaign. She spoke with me from Cincinnati, Ohio. We are talking tonight about John Kerry's catch-up challenge in the race for the White House, asking how bad the slippage is and how he might scramble back. Why has Bush pulled ahead and Kerry fallen? What strategy, what message might put the Democratic contender back in front? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Ryan Lizza, senior editor at the New Republic magazine. He writes the weekly column and blog Campaign Journal. Ryan Lizza, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guest.
Ryan Lizza, take us inside the staffing changes. We've heard about a shakeup or at least an infusion in Kerry's inner circle of campaign advisors in the last couple of days. What has happened there?
Well, look, let me say first, I think some of these changes were going to happen anyway, but they sort of took on a greater sense of urgency as the Swift boat attacks in August sort of knocked the Kerry campaign back on its heels. So you know, I think they were planning on making a few changes, but the sort of sniping and griping from Democrats outside the campaign asking, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you responding forcefully to these guys?
So who's in, who's out, who's promoted, who's got his ear?
Well, Here's what happened. They haven't actually lost any staffers, but they've added Joel Johnson, a former Clinton White House veteran who's going to run the war room. He's going to do the rapid response. He's going to hit back when they get attacked and make sure that the campaign is hitting back. They've also added Joe Lockhart, the former Clinton White House press secretary. And Lockhart is going to be a sort of senior communications advisor. We've already seen him out on one of the Sunday shows and out doing a lot of TV. One of the problems the Kerry campaign has had is that they haven't had a very good presence on television. They haven't had sort of one public face of the campaign that goes on TV.
Yeah.
The Bush campaign has a few that you immediately know are the face of the Bush campaign when you see them. The Kerry campaign has sort of struggled to define that role. So I think Lockhart's going to do a lot of that. Then you have a gentleman named John Sasso, who a lot of people remember from the Dukakis campaign. He's a longtime confidant of Kerry, and he's going to be traveling with Kerry on the road. Sort of someone that aides say will be able to tell him when he's off message to sort of be very frank and upfront about what he's doing right and wrong. Sasso comes from the DNC. He's actually had a very important role in the campaign up to this point anyway. He's just moving to a different position. He was in charge of putting a lot of the communications work with the Democratic Convention. So
let's stay with this one for a second, Ryan. Remind us exactly of his role, what it was and what it wasn't in the Dukakis campaign.
Well, he was a top advisor to Michael Dukakis, and he left the campaign or was forced out of the campaign because he leaked a videotape to the press. And the story actually sounds quaint in retrospect, just considering some of the scandals that have happened since then. Mm-hmm. But the tape showed that Joe Biden, one of Dukakis' primary opponents, seemed to have, let's say, borrowed some lines from a British politician. And when it was found out, there was a sort of inquisition to figure out who leaked this to reporters, and when it was found out that Sasso did it, Dukakis forced him out of the campaign. He later rejoined the campaign in the fall, And a lot of people say that if Sasso, you know, there's some Democrats that have said that if Sasso had stayed in the campaign, maybe Dukakis would have won that race. He's highly thought of.
Yeah, is John Sasso the signal that is he the leg breaker? Or is he the signal that Kerry can get as down and dirty as anybody else?
Well, I mean, you know, his name's sort of become synonymous for negative campaigning because of that one incident. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think he's a tough, skilled operative. And one of the problems with the Kerry campaign, to be honest, is that, you know, they don't have at the senior ranks, they don't have a lot of folks who have done this before, have gone through this before and have won a race. So, you know, adding a veteran in a prominent role like that is something that they needed to do.
And then we're hearing about James Carville, Stanley Greenberg, Paul Begala.
Yeah, you know, Begala and Carville and Greenberg are all going to take on a stepped-up advisory role, apparently. I mean, to tell you the truth, a lot of people don't know this, but Begala has been very instrumental to the Kerry communication shop previously. He, in fact, someone over there told me that he was spending half days working at the campaign, helping out, giving advice. So it's not a total shock that he's going to taking on some kind of advisory role. But he's not going to be a paid advisor. Mm-hmm. None of these guys are. Mm-hmm. And Stanley Greenberg, of course, is a pollster. He was added to the Gore campaign in the final months of the Gore campaign. He's sort of credited with giving or advising Gore to take on a little bit more of a populist message in the final weeks of that campaign. And then the other big change, and Carville, of course, is famous to anyone who covers politics and famous to anyone who watched the 1992 documentary about the Clinton campaign,
right.
The War Room. I mean, he's a hard-nosed operative that has been advising the Kerry campaign to get tough, to respond to these attacks faster and with a little bit more fury. And he and Greenberg have also been writing some memos recently saying that Kerry's convention was a mistake in that it overemphasized national security, in that it focused solely on, not even national security, but strictly on Kerry's biography, which was a sort of stand-in for his national security credentials. And they've been advising him that he has to turn the race to sort of bread-and-butter democratic issues if he wants to win.
More economy. The other big change you mentioned?
And then the final change, I hope I'm not leaving anything out here, is Michael Hooley, who is another sort of legendary Democratic operative who is sometimes credited with helping Kerry win Iowa. And he's a sort of nuts and bolts ground guy. He really went in, shook up the Iowa operation during the caucuses, did a lot of the targeting, a lot of the get out the vote activity, the sort of, you know, unglamorous work that actually wins elections. And he's also famous from the 2000 Gore campaign. He was the guy that got on the phone and told Gore, don't concede. I'm looking at the Florida numbers. This looks a lot closer than everyone thinks, and you got to hang in there.
Jack Beatty, join us here for a second. We're hearing still, despite the poll numbers, that you heard it from Jill Lawrence there in Cincinnati, a kind of quiet confidence in the Kerry campaign that they're going to turn this around, that the bounce will be ephemeral, that it will evaporate, they'll be back at least neck and neck. Does that feel justified to you, Jack?
No, it doesn't. Two voters yesterday expressed my views. One was a woman in St. Paul, and she was tasking John Edwards. She was saying, you know, they've made Kerry look like a waffler and soft on defense, and they've made you look like an ambulance chaser. And then she said, they're going to run you right over and make you look like idiots. Well, that, I think, has been what's happening here. How you've got a war hero and then a moral hero for protesting the war made out to be some kind of, a weak man, whereas a president who has to take his vice president in with him to testify before the 9/11 commission, he comes out as the giant. And you know, you really have to wonder how that happened. And, of course, the convention, I agree. Not only did the convention not give a domestic vision, there was no eloquence. There was no urgency about it. It was what John Kerry has done throughout his career. He runs on his resume. That won't do it this time. And then the other comment was made by a woman in Cannonsburg, Ohio. And her husband's facing layoff as a member of U.S. Airways in the fall. And she pointed to her daughter. She said, you see those two young ladies over there? She started to sob. I'm tired of saying no. We say no all the time. The American middle class is saying no all the time to its children. That's John Kerry's theme.
Well, that may be what they pick up on. Ryan, Liz, Jack Beatty, stand by. We are talking this hour about John Kerry's catch-up challenge in the home stretch of the race for the White House. You can join us. How can he scramble back? Why has Bush pulled ahead? Why has Kerry fallen? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about John Kerry's catch-up challenge in the home stretch of the race for the White House. You can join the conversation tonight. Is John Kerry in big trouble? Or is he still well in the game? Is John Kerry another comeback kid? And what's the best Kerry strategy for these last 8 weeks? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with Ryan Lizza, senior editor at The New Republic, joining us from Washington. Joining us now from Washington, Ray Strother, Democratic media consultant and author of Falling Up, How a Redneck Helped Invent Political Consulting. Ray Strother, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And joining us from Barnstable, Massachusetts, David Gergen, served as an advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. He's professor of public service and director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. David Gergen, wonderful to have you.
Good. Good evening. Good to be here.
David Gergen, first to you, how would you sum up John Kerry's position in the race right now?
It's not over, but he is in some trouble, and there ought to be deep concern, as there is on the Democratic side. He's going to have to fight his way back, claw his way back from the position he was in. He's gone from modestly up to modestly to perhaps a little more down.
Ray Strother, do you feel the same, or do you see this as that temporary bounce that some in the Kerry campaign are talking about?
I'm not alarmist. I think the campaign is actually in real good shape. And I think they're coming back now. This was a natural thing. And all this sniping from the outside happens in every presidential race. I've been in about three of them. And let a poll slip a couple of points, and everybody starts jumping like wolves or tigers on the prey. And they try to say that things have to be done and people have to be fired. And that's happened in this campaign, too. It always happens. However, this is a very good campaign. It's had good media. It's had good leadership. It's had a good message. I really am not an alarmist, and I think they'll come back and they'll do well. I think they're going to win this race.
David Gergen, that's a pretty good report card from Ray Strother. What kind of report card would you give the campaign so far?
Well, I have a great deal of respect for Ray Strother, but on this one I do have some difference of opinion. I think most people would agree that while John Kerry was spectacularly good in Iowa during the primary season and fought his way back, that his campaign since that time has been somewhat uneven. He had a decent convention, but I think he certainly did not hit it out of the park. He didn't make the kind of emotional connection he needed to make with the voters. So he was vulnerable in a variety of different ways in August, and he had a horrible August. I think the big question for him right now, did August crack apart this campaign and give George W. Bush a lead that he's going to maintain through the end? Or can John Kerry now fight his way back? And I think he's got that capacity, and I think he's got an opportunity. Given the record of what's happening in Iraq, what's happening in the economy, there are a lot of vulnerabilities. There are a lot of sort of bleeding wounds on the Republican side that John Kerry can't exploit and ride. But he's got to run a much more effective campaign in the next 60 days than he's run in the last 30 days.
So David Gergen, what's the strategy, or some elements of it anyway, that you would see to exploit those opportunities which are problems for George Bush?
Well, I must say I don't know what his message is, and we've all read in the last 48 hours that Bill Clinton called him and they had this long conversation, and everybody now seems to agree on the Kerry side that he ought to just talk about the domestic side. I don't think that's not a sufficient strategy to win this, given Iraq and a war on terrorism. He can't walk away from the foreign policy side. He is going to give a talk tomorrow about foreign policy, but somehow he has got to unite the two wings of the Bush record, the economy and Iraq, into a single message. And it's a message about, and I think he's on track, using the W for wrong or wrong way. I think he's got to make the argument, basically, yes, Bush is a strong leader, but he's wrong-headed. He's taking us the wrong direction. We're going the wrong way. And that what's needed in the office, not just strength, but judgment, not just an unwavering sense of principle, but wisdom. And I think that he can't just do this in my judgment, on issue terms. This race is going to come down to people's judgments about the two individual men and who is better prepared, whether they like them, whether they share their values, and whether they respect and trust them to lead in the next 4 years. It's not going to be a particular economic policy. Kerry's had a really hard time convincing people telling people what his economic policies are. They're hard to understand sometimes, say especially his health care policies. He's got to distill this into something that's a message about Bush is judgment and his stubbornness when things aren't working well. Jack, and then he's got to offer the alternative of where he would go.
Yeah. Jack Beatty, you have watched John Kerry for a long time in a number of campaigns. Has he got the stuff to do this? People always talk about John Kerry as a powerful closer who will fight tooth and nail, especially when he's down late in a race, and has done it successfully many times. Has he got the stuff to do it this time?
I think that strong finisher thing is a myth. I mean, let's look at this. The strong finisher comes out of 1996 when he ran against Bill Weld, a very popular governor. He was a sitting senator. He held on to his seat. But what was happening in Massachusetts at the time? Bill Clinton was winning it by about 30 points. If he couldn't bring a sitting senator over the finish line against even a hugely popular governor, there's something wrong. I mean, it was less John Kerry finishing well, it seems to me, than it was Bill Clinton pulling him over the top. And people just forget that all the time. John Kerry doesn't step up to it. He talks in slogans. This W thing is the latest thing. He doesn't talk sense to people. I have yet to nod my head when he's talking and think, boy, that makes a lot of sense. Instead, there's this hyperbolic political and media people talk about, you know, buzzwords and the rest. He doesn't just do what Bill Clinton did, which is just reason, just tell people what the alternatives are, just calmly lay things out. Instead, it's all this tactical, symbolic stuff and you know, trying to indicate what he's going to do. And I'm afraid his limits as a he's right up against his limits as a communicator, and beyond that, his limits as a very tactical guy, a guy who just thinks in terms of day to day. And really, you know, the president, for all you and I could go on forever, but I mean, at Madison Square Garden, look what he did. He laid out a vision of where we are in history, and he connected it from what we need to do abroad. Create more democracy, more freedom for our security, and what we need to do at home, create more freedom for American workers. I mean, he had a thematic yet to come out of this Kerry campaign.
Ray Strother, what do you say? Some pretty tough report cards on John Kerry here. Do you think he's got the stuff to punch holes in the Bush convention line and scrape back here?
Well, you know, interested in David Gergen and his point that having a bad August, David, I'd much rather have a bad August than a bad October.
And, but if October looks like August, well, you can go home.
Well, that'll be pretty bad, David, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think campaigns are step processes, and you run against an incumbent president of the United States who is not terribly popular, no matter how you look at it. And they had several things they had to do. They had an unknown senator from the Boston area who had to be recognized and introduced to the people. They did that. Then they had to, they knew Bush's entire strength was national defense, so they had to do something about that. So they used a convention to credential Kerry there. Maybe they overdid it. I'm not sure they didn't overdo it, but I don't want to be one of those people who criticize from the outside after it's done. But they had to credential in there. So they did what they had to do. The foundation's laid now for a campaign. Remember, George Bush is not terribly popular. There are a lot of things wrong in the country, things perceived wrong in the country, and people will be reminded of that in the next few weeks, and this race will tighten up again. It'll be a dead heat going in probably to the November election. And the other thing that's happening now is pretty interesting. I've been talking to a lot of pollsters. As everyone knows, Jack German just wrote in his new book, Fat Man Fed Up.
Yeah.
It's harder and harder to poll now. A lot of reasons. There are a lot of things. ID, cell phones, et cetera, et cetera.
And people just hang
but
up.
People hang up. There are a lot of things going on. But the other thing that's really interesting about what's happening in polling is that do you poll registered Democrats, registered Republicans, or do you poll frequent voters, or do you poll? I've seen some real recent disasters where pollsters spoke to only likely voters, and likely voters are normally self-declared likely voters. Mm-hmm. In the last election, if you remember, Bush went into that election against Al Gore with a lead and lost by 500,000 votes. And were the polls wrong? Maybe they polled the wrong people. And I get an idea that maybe that's happening now, that polls aren't going to be indicate as much as they have in the past, because it's harder and harder to poll. Where a pollster could call four or five people and get a respondent, now they have to call scores of people to get someone who will talk to them.
And yet,
that alone qualifies the person they're talking to as somewhat different than the average person.
And yet everybody loves the polls when they're going their way. I want to turn to our callers. Mike's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice discussion, gentlemen. But with all due respect, let me give you a little upper Midwest wisdom here.
Let's hear it, Mike.
You know, if I'm going to sit down and watch TV and contemplate who will be the next president for me, I sure as heck don't want some guy who halfway through the campaign decides to throw out everybody or even allow people to begin talking like he's throwing out everybody who helped him form up his campaign and bringing on a new team to whip him into shape. That does not strike me as presidential. So I think this is just a fundamental mistake to even – maybe they should have just said, Paul Begala, come on in the back door. Hey, we'd like to hear from you. Maybe they throw Baldy there out on TV on Meet the Press with his wife once in a while. But
you don't like the shake-up aroma around here now. Yet, Ryan Lizza, Mike, thanks for your call. Ryan Lizza, you were saying earlier that shake-up's not exactly the right word. What do you say to Mike?
Look, I think a lot of these changes were going to happen anyway, and if Kerry was running a brilliant campaign and he was ahead in the poll by 5 points and he brought in these new people, we'd all be writing that George Bush was really in trouble because now Kerry was bringing in some big guns adding to
doubling
the already
up.
talented staff. So I think part of it is just the perspective of where he sits right now in the polls. He's having some trouble, so we sort of are looking at the shakeup through that lens. Granted, there's no doubt that the troubles in August sort of accelerated some of these additions. Look, he's not firing anyone. I think a couple of people inside the campaign are probably going to be getting marginalized, but he hasn't fired anyone like he did in the primaries when he fired his campaign manager and brought on an entirely different staff.
Dave Gergen, does John Kerry have a style problem in the way he's managed his campaign, or is that fairly marginal compared to the bigger issues you were describing earlier?
Who made the remark that this is because the quality of Noah's Ark about the campaign? Or two of everything.
Yeah, two of everything.
I think there's no problem in shaking up your campaign if at the end of the day you have a strong campaign team that can really run things. Reagan shook up his campaign and went on to win handily in 1980, earlier to be sure, but nonetheless. The critical issue is that Bush has a strategy. He has a campaign strategist who is listened to, the president has faith in, and they have they're very good about their message. They're very good about themes. This is a well-organized, whatever you may say about the governance of the Bush team, they're pretty darn good at campaigning. So far, they've out-campaigned the Kerry team, if I may say so. I think it doesn't make a difference if you have 50 people in there, but you've got to have a single mind that's really bringing together the message and the understanding and where they're going, and that I don't sense they have right now for all the changes they're making. And if you read his speeches over the last 3 or 4 days since all of this turmoil started.
George Bush's or John Kerry's, David?
John Kerry's. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make out what's the theme here. What's the consistent theme in this, pudding? It's still flailing around from my point of view.
Though he's hanging on now to this W for wrong, and at least it's got a simplicity about it.
I think the one thing he has been able to do in the last few days is to move away from Vietnam, which has been helpful for him.
Yeah.
And I think he's moving back to Iraq and the economy, which and presumably health care and middle class squeeze and the like, which I think is helpful, because I do think Ray Strother is right that there are some vulnerabilities here that could help close this thing up. But it's still unclear. I didn't know you had a third party here. Is it Ryan Lizza? Is that his name?
Ryan Lizza with the New Republic. Is
Ryan?
Ryan.
I thought Ryan's point. I'm sorry. I thought he had some very good points about the lack of thematic wholeness here, and I also agree with him, by the way, about the 96 race against Bill Weld in the closer. There is a lot of evidence that what really happened there was that the Democrats came home in those last weeks, and Bill Clinton won the state by over 30 points. If you really ought to be able to win with a 30-point victory, a guy that headed the ticket.
Yeah, that sounds like our Jack Beatty's argument right there. Let's get another call.
I'll take the credit for it.
Okay. Nicola is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Nicola. You're on the air.
Hi, Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. I was calling. I am 26 years old. I'm an African-American woman.
Okay, great.
And so not usually a polled voter. But I definitely, in terms of Kerry's strategy or lack of strategy, have to say that if he really wants to pull in voters, he wants to pull in my demographic at least, he's going to have to address the issues more clearly. He's going to have to answer them more truthfully, such as the his votes on the war. He, of course, voted for the war like everyone else did right after September 11th.
Or he would say he voted to give the president the green light to go to war, but now he says, you know, the president didn't do it the way he would have.
Right. But, of course, I mean, we all wanted to go to war at first because we thought there were weapons of mass destruction. And then we didn't want to go to war anymore, and we don't want to be there now because we know there are not weapons of mass destruction. He needs to address the issues truthfully. He needs to stop using jargon, as the expert said earlier. Mm-hmm. He needs to be truthful and straightforward with us. We want him to talk about the issues. We don't care about Vietnam. It was 30 years ago. It doesn't matter. We really want to hear him talk about what he's going to do for the country and what he's going to do for the communities. We want to hear about what he's going to do about jobs and lack of. We want to hear about what he's going to do for those people who are homeless now, those people who are out of work.
So you want it all, and you want it all more straightforward, Nicola, and we've got that. Thanks for your call, Ray Strother. How about it? This isn't the first election in which you'll hear people say, I want to know exactly what he's going to do. I want him to be clearer. And yet it does seem a consistent complaint concern with John Kerry. Is he missing the thematic hole somehow?
Well, I think he's beginning to fall into line with it. I think it's coming around, and I think it's going to be okay. You know, what we haven't discussed, though, in a presidential race like this, with the world in such a state of flux, is the big event. The big event. You know, we're not going to call it the October surprise right now because that means something contrived. But, you know, we're soon going to have 1,000 people dead in Iraq. And when we hit that 1,000.
Well, it depends how you count it. The White House counted in 3 contractors. I think a lot of the press is waiting for it to be full-fledged military. But in any case, we are right up against
it
for sure.
That's going to have something to do with this election because it's going to reinforce the idea that we're there fighting a battle that we can't win. That's one thing. And we don't know what's going to happen to the economy. We don't know. You know, there are a lot of unknowns still in this race, and this race is so close that one of the unknowns could actually play a larger part than in normal circumstances.
David Gergen, and Ono, you've just got you for another half a minute here. Your final thoughts on Kerry in the home stretch?
Well, I want to come back to this point of a theme, it's got to be a John Kerry, I think, cannot depend, as much as I do think, as Ray Strother does, that there may be external events that will break between now and the election that could affect the outcome. I don't think he can depend on those, no more than I think he can depend on sort of waiting for the debate to pull himself back into this. I think he's got, between now and the debate, to get off the defense and go on the offense. And to do that, he needs a theme. He needs a very clear-cut message, and if I were in his situation, I'd start looking at the possibility of doing a 10- or 15-minute TV buy in swing states and going on with the speech.
David Gergen, we're up against the break with that. I know we have to let you go. Thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you very much.
David Gergen from the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, former advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. We're talking tonight about John Kerry's catch-up challenge. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about John Kerry's catch-up challenge in the home stretch of the race for the White House. You can join our conversation tonight. What is working in the Kerry message and what's not? Will the Bush bounce last? Is John Kerry a strong enough closer to pull this out? Are the debates a sure win for Kerry or a toss-up? And what do you want to hear now from John Kerry? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Washington by Ray Strother, a Democratic media consultant, and Ryan Lizza, senior editor at the New Republic magazine. We're joined right now from Newton, Massachusetts, by Dan Payne, a Democratic strategist and media consultant. He's advised Kerry on some of his past Senate campaigns. Dan Payne, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, Tom.
So give us your report, Doctor. How do you see the Kerry campaign standing right now?
Well, I think Kerry has clearly been hurt by the events of August, and I think those include his declaration, his Grand Canyon doctrine, of no regrets about his vote on Iraq. That took some of the post-convention momentum away from him. He hasn't been able to get separation from Bush on Iraq. Lately, he's been talking about the wrong war, wrong time, and the wrong place. That's a good start, but he needs to step-by-step distance himself from Bush as quickly as possible. I don't think, by the way, that making a change in your campaign at this point is unique to Kerry. Bush practically begged Karen Hughes to come back and to help run his reelection campaign, and so clearly she made a difference. But there's a lot of work for John Kerry to do, and one of the things I was sort of upset about when I watched the Democratic convention, and I got doubly upset when I saw the Republican convention, is the Democrats decided to take this all-positive approach, no criticizing Bush. So the Bush Republicans then turn that on its head and spend their entire convention trashing John Kerry from every conceivable angle. And what I think the Kerry campaign forgot is that in a convention you have a captive audience, and that includes not only delegates but reporters. So what you say is what they report. And if you're only reporting positive stuff, that's what they're going to report. And I was struck when I was reading the Boston Globe during the Republican convention that there were probably six or seven stories on a page that were critical of Kerry, because that's what the speakers of the day were doing. So I hope, if nothing else, I hope we learned a lesson here as Democrats that happy talk is not the way to run a convention.
Do you think that he can get tough, get very harsh now, and have it work for him, Dan Payne?
Well, I've known John Sasso since 1982, worked in many campaigns with him. John's going to be traveling with Kerry now, and I think that his job will be to enforce the message on the plane, which can be in many ways more important than being in the headquarters trying to decide what the message is. But just making sure that Kerry is disciplined and focused. I think he's got enough time. We have three debates.
Maybe two. I see today George Bush has appointed Jim Baker to negotiate over the debates, and they only want two.
And Kerry has appointed Vernon Jordan, who's a formidable legal mind as well, and I don't think would be bullied or intimidated by James Baker. But we've got a lot of things that need to be fixed in the Kerry campaign, and I believe that the John Sasso is a step in the right direction, because he knows how to run a national campaign. He ran the Dukakis campaign until the voting started. He set it in motion, and then Dukakis was forced to get rid of him, and the Sasso campaign got Dukakis to the convention. After the convention, Dukakis had no idea what to do. Sasso wasn't around, and the campaign simply fell apart. But coming on now at this point, and having watched the campaign since June, when he was at the Democratic National Committee, Sasso, I'm sure, has very clear ideas about what he wants to do.
So it looks like a good step to you. Micah is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Micah. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah.
I think that the way that Kerry can move ahead is to actively point out the lies that Bush has been telling to the American public and how he's lied throughout his presidency. I was canvassing this weekend in New Hampshire, and people at the door, undecided voters, were saying, I don't know if I can trust Kerry, but Bush is really doing his best he can, you know, to keep us safe. And somehow they've managed to frame Kerry as the person we shouldn't trust, as opposed what I'm saying is that Kerry should be pointing out this giant lie that has been told the American public about Iraq and connecting Iraq, especially to September 11th, which is truly offensive to people who died there. And so I think that framing Bush as a liar, I know that's strong language, but pointing out the lies he's told to the American public is one way that Kerry can move ahead in this race.
Micah, we've got it. Thanks for your call. Ryan, Liz, how about it? Should it be really gloves off time? Go after it hammer and tongs? Go at the Vietnam-era war record at every point of dispute about reality that the Democrats and Republicans have today? There are a lot of them.
Yeah, I think being going on the offensive is a good idea. I'm not so sure the personal attacks work as well as the policy attacks. Like your caller just mentioned, a very important point. One of the goals of the Republican convention was to get rid of any distinction between 9/11 and Iraq. They talked a lot of Republicans on stage talked about them interchangeably. Kerry had an incredible opportunity today to make a statement on this 1,000 milestone of deaths, and I was sort of shocked when he started talking about it. He described the war in Iraq as the war on terror, which is exactly the point that
Bush's
George
language.
W. Bush has been making for months and months. And I sort of, my jaw dropped. I mean, that, it's the Kerry campaign's job right now to make it clear in everyone's mind that 9/11 and Iraq have nothing to do with each other. And to the extent that he needs to talk about national security, he obviously wants to focus on Bush's unpopular war in Iraq rather than his sort of popular response to 9/11.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, please. Sure. Dan Payne, yes.
I don't think it's possible at this point for Kerry to separate Iraq and the fight on terror when Bush pretty much has ground that into the mentality of most Americans.
But can he win without drawing a distinction there?
I think he can continue to say that the war on terror is not limited to Iraq or even Iraq and Afghanistan. But what he needs to have soon is an affirmative position on terror. Make it clear that he has a plan, a comprehensive plan of action to make America safe. That's what people are concerned about, is their own safety. Which country you're doing business in order to make them safe is secondary to their own feeling of security. And what Bush has done is he's turned Iraq and what he's doing there, as badly as he's managing it, into an argument for preserving the American way. Bush also knows how to speak in very simplistic language that Kerry does not, and he makes the connections to ordinary people very efficiently.
That Bush vernacular is very strong, and as you say, they're very good at shaping truth to, I would say almost kind of mythological forms that Americans are familiar with and like, Dan Payne.
Yes, they're very good at exploiting the American myths about itself, that we are a good people, we are decent, we do not exploit, we are God-fearing, you can
all true, but not without some checkered qualities.
Yeah, and those traits aren't unique to Republicans.
Pete's calling from Southern Cross, North Carolina. Hi, Pete, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
Yeah, I'm from Southern Pines, North Carolina.
Southern Pines, good. Good to have you, Pete. Thanks.
My thinking on this with John Kerry, I think a lot of it is the context. The media doesn't really give it a full context of what he's saying all the time. And when I read or if I hear him speak and I hear him say he didn't vote for the war in Iraq, he voted for use of force in Iraq,
yes,
with the UN, and to give the weapons inspectors enough time. And Bush lied on both counts. And Kerry's brought him attention to that. But the media really doesn't bring that up. It really says his vote for the war. It wasn't for the war. It was for the use of force with the UN and let the weapons inspectors give them time to do their work.
All of that is true, and yet you're right. It doesn't come across that way. It gets simplified by the Bush campaign and simplified by headlines and by the media. So my question to you, Pete, is this. Does that mean, is it the media's fault then, or is John Kerry simply not being clear and simple enough in the way he gets it across?
Well, I think it's the media's fault because they were the full kind. I'll give you one example.
Yeah.
They talked about his, you know, he wants to bring the troops home in 4 years, and then they go, well, he flip-flopped the other day, before he said he wanted to increase the troops in Iraq. But there was a question asked to him if the generals needed more troops. And he said, yes, he would give them what they needed,
right,
the troops. And so it came across like, you know, he made a flip-flop, which he doesn't. He has been consistent that he needs the international community in there. That's his plan. Everybody should really take, you know, a heart to that because that is his plan. He's brought that up consistently. The international community has to take a hold in Iraq. They have to invest in Iraq and be part of the building of Iraq, not Halliburton and Cheney's company.
Pete, I hear you loud and clear, and you make a very good point. Jack Beatty, I want to turn this to you because there's an interesting question that Pete raises here. If John Kerry's got more nuance, and he gets mocked for that, but it's not exactly an overwhelming, stultifying amount of nuance. Maybe it's just what's required for a sophisticated conversation. Is this a candidate who's simply speaking into a kind of a debased or oversimplified environment that's, for one, whatever reason, just not willing to consider anything at that level of sophistication or subtlety?
Well, I think Pete is onto something. I mean, the mindless myrmidons of the media elite are the people who helped to get us into Iraq. They spread this propaganda. They made all this convincing. And two of the major institutions, the New York Times and the Washington Post, have said mea culpa in various degrees of intensity. We goofed. We really were off. But they were not just off. They were way off. And if they were way off, look at these people on television. I mean, my God, these talking heads, I watch them. I watch CNN. And I got to tell you, if there's anything going on upstairs on any of those people who are reporting the news, I'm unaware of it. And every single person you see on television, all of these people are going to have a tax increase if John Kerry is elected. Let's face it. These people are the elite. And all they're looking for is the one soundbite that allows them to go to John King, it's for you. What do you, Bush, say about this? What does Kerry say about that? And they've got their horse race stuff going. Meanwhile, this woman out in Ohio says, I'm tired of saying no. We say no to our kids all the time. Why aren't they talking about that?
Dan Payne, what's the lesson we take from that? Let's say the media is oversimplifying. So is it the candidate's job to get down there and simplify too, to win at that level, or something else?
I think it's the job of the campaign people to admonish the media and to hold them to account. I'm concerned, frankly, that we had the media embedded in the early weeks of the war in Iraq, and they've come home, most of them. Some of them have even come to their senses. But we have them now embedded in the Bush-Cheney view of the world. And they're starting to report as though Bush and Cheney are unstoppable. And this has got to be something. I mean, I have a personal motto, which is it never hurts to complain about bad press. And I think the Kerry campaign, needs to have a systematic effort to watch and critique the way they're getting covered. If you started to complain before Labor Day, you were a whiner. But now that we've got past Labor Day, you have every right to complain every day, if necessary, how you're covered.
Ray Strother, how about this? The idea that could get some legs here of the Bush campaign as being unstoppable. Do you feel that in the air, in the coverage tone?
Well, I think probably in August it has been in the air. But our last two callers have been very interesting. They both used a word. Words are very important in this business, incredibly important. Both of these last callers, to explain themselves, use the word lie, L-I-E. Mm-hmm. We in the Democratic Party have feminized our language so much that we don't use strong words anymore. And in the convention, if you took the rhetoric from the Republican convention and you took the rhetoric from the Democratic convention, and what you would find if you looked at the quality of the words, words like lie, fight, death, those words don't appear in the Democratic rhetoric. What we've got to do is we've got to stop being careful. And when the president is a liar, we must call the president a liar. And we've been reluctant to do that. We find cute ways to do it. But we must explain to the people. Kerry must explain to the people. This man has not been honest with us time after time after time. And these callers hit it. And I think our campaign should hit it, too. It's a lie that we're worried about now.
A lie. L-I-E. Ray Strother spells it out. Jack Beatty, last word goes to you. Is John Kerry up to that? He can get pretty shirty, pretty fierce up against the wall. He may be close to it.
Well, more than himself is involved here. People earning the minimum wage are involved. People who want to start unions are involved. People who don't want to say no to their children are involved. He's got to fight just as hard as those people's need.
Jack, thanks for being with us tonight. Dan Payne, Ray Strother, and Ryan Lizza, thanks to each of you for joining us tonight. Wonderful to have all three of you. Thanks a lot for coming on. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.